Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. If the first album you ever obsessed over is the Beatles' Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, you're not alone. Music lovers and music scholars have been unpacking this particular adventure in concept, songwriting, and production for decades. Now you can watch the film Deconstructing Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band in Sioux Falls at the Icon Lounge. That's on March 14th. It's through Cinema Falls. We'll have more details about that later. But first, a conversation with the composer, musician, and Beatles scholar, Scott Fryman. The film is a series that showcases the talents of John, Paul, George, and Ringo, but also gives you a seat at one of Scott's dynamic lectures that have changed the way the world listens to music. Scott Fryman joins us now via phone from New York. Scott, welcome to In the Moment.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
So I'm glad we're talking about this album because I discovered it when I was in high school, long after it had, you know, had its initial debut in 1967. And of course, as many teenagers do, I thought I was the first one to discover it. What right. is it overall about Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band that you think gives you that intimate experience where you feel like you're the first person in the world to ever listen to it and find something within?
Well, I think bottom line, it's the songs, right? The music is, they're great songs. They're produced in a very, very interesting way. So each song has a character about it, both talks about a character, but also has some kind of musical character, whether it's the, you know, the trippy Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds or The World of India and Within You Without You, The Circus of Mr. Kite. Each song is kind of its own world. And I remember the way I got into Sgt. Pepper was my uncle gave me the album and started telling me about the album cover. And I was just fascinated by the cover because that in itself is it's this, there's so many people and figures and flowers and things. And then when you listen to the music, it's kind of like that as well. Each song unlocks all of this wonderful, wonderful music for you.
Can you put the album 1967 release, if I understand that correctly, into the context of where the Beatles are at in their career at the time?
Yes, absolutely. So the Beatles have made the decision coming off of their tour in 1966 to give up touring. Excuse me. And that was a huge decision because bands existed, you know, they came out with albums, but they also went on the road and they toured. And a band to say we're only going to be a studio band, that's something that didn't really exist. And a lot of people thought that meant the Beatles were breaking up. What it did for the Beatles is it freed them up from having to worry about how they were going to reproduce this music live. And so in the studio, they could add instruments that they could never bring out on stage. They could do effects and, you know, speed up and slow down tapes and all of these interesting things without having to think about how are we going to perform this live. And I think it was very freeing for them, and it made Sgt. Pepper a very progressive album.
So what do you know about their time in the studio? Is that just a time of creative awakening for them, or is there conflict between the musicians at this point?
So I think, you know, starting with Revolver, which came out in 66 and kind of leading through Pepper, the Beatles were really firing on all cylinders. There was a lot of collaboration on Revolver. Pepper was mostly John and Paul, but still Ringo and George contributing a tremendous, tremendous amount to that album. And I think they're all having fun. You know, there was this little bit of nervousness about could they survive as a studio-only band, and I think they sunk that nervousness into creating some of the best music ever. And when they started off the album, well, they started with Strawberry Fields Forever and Penny Lane, which didn't end up on the album, and then A Day in the Life. And those three songs are so extraordinary that, you know, they knew they were on to something really big. And George Martin, their producer, you know, certainly knew that. And so I think they were very excited about it, and I think they were having a lot of fun working on this all the way through to the, you know, to the cover shoot and the release party.
Let's talk a little bit before we sort of break into deconstruction about that cover shoot and the art there, because you brought it up in the beginning. That comes at the end of, you know, they've already created the music at this point, or does that come earlier on?
It comes near the end of the process. And Paul had had this idea, and I talk about how he came up with it, but he had this idea of gathering people around a drum, which there were other albums of bands that kind of did that, and he wanted to conjure up this image of the Beatles as a new band. And so all of the Beatles contributed people that they wanted to stand behind them, and then the artists had people make flower sculptures, and people brought in things from their homes, and they staged this photo shoot. And what a lot of people don't realize is all of those people standing behind the Beatles, they're actually cardboard cutouts, and this was a photo. This was not a collage. These people were actually put on these life-size cardboard cutouts and positioned behind the Beatles. So it was nothing like the album cover had ever been seen before.
Right.
You know, it was just so different.
Are the Beatles themselves standing there, or are they cardboard cutouts too?
No, the actual Beatles are standing there, but next to them are sculptures from Madame Tussauds, you know, standing the old Beatles to their right. So,
all right. So, who's behind them, and how are they making those selections? What do you know about that?
So, it's people who've inspired them. You know, friends of theirs like Stu Sutcliffe, who was the original bass player in the Beatles, who died of a brain hemorrhage. People like Marlon Brando. There are some gurus there that Harrison contributed. Dylan's in there. And then there are some people who got cut at the last minute, like Gandhi. Gandhi was in there in the original photos, and the brass at EMI Records were worried how their Indian counterparts would react to having Gandhi on the cover. Gandhi was still a controversial figure, and so they airbrushed him out and a few other people. So it was just sort of this hodgepodge of different people from the Beatles' lives, or different people that they thought would be funny to put in there, and some heroes of theirs, all standing with the Beatles, and then a TV set that John brought in from home, a doll with a Rolling Stones T-shirt on it, and a flower sculpture of a guitar, and so forth.
It sounds really fun and creative and joyful. Is it all those things? And a little bit subversive?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and the music is, the cover is, you know, even things like putting lyrics on the back of the album cover, you don't realize how advanced that was. No one was doing that. And the fact that they put lyrics on an album, there were, you know, music publishers who were very upset about this because people would buy their sheet music to get lyrics. So now the Beatles were sort of putting that out there for free. So everything about this album, from the music to the presentation, was thought through and was something new and different.
Scott, I think I had a cassette tape, and I think you unfolded and unfolded and unfolded that little piece of paper that they kind of wedged in the plastic case of the cassette tape. I think that's the first time I experienced, I guess that dates me in a very particular time.
You didn't have an 8-track.
Right, exactly. You know exactly how old I am now because, you know, it was a cassette tape. So let's talk about the music now. And where do you want to begin? Let me ask you this. Tell me about the film series, the lecture series, and your desire to sort of help audiences redefine how they listen to something by digging into particular Beatles albums.
So this started out as a talk for some friends in my living room. And seriously, and literally about 10 minutes into my talk, which I just did for them, they said, "Where else are you doing this?" And gave me some people to call. And I didn't really, you know, I've always been fascinated by how the creative process works. I had no idea what kind of reaction I would get. And over the last couple years, I've been doing these lectures at theaters, at universities. I taught a 13-part course at Yale. I was at Facebook, Google, Pixar, and everyone, wherever you come from, whatever age you are, people love to unlock this music. And there are technical books that you can buy, but you can read the technical books, but it's hard without actually hearing the music. And so what I try and do in my lectures is I try and talk about how the music was written, how the music was produced in a fashion that people who've never set foot in a studio or never written a song can understand it, and then actually being able to play some rare music that goes along with what I'm talking about. And people say they never listen to the album the same way again because you're really understanding so much more about what went into creating the music.
And I believe one of your films, maybe it was on the White Album, I'm not sure, that lecture series film was in Sioux Falls and backed by popular demand through Cinema Falls. You can see Deconstructing Sergeant Pepper next. That's on March 14th. We'll give you some ticket details a little bit later on. My guest right now is Scott Fryman. We're reaching him from New York. And Scott, let's talk about some of those individual songs. Where do you want to begin? You want to begin at the beginning of the album, or you want to jump in somewhere else?
Well, I have a 90-minute film on the whole thing. So,
right.
But I will give you a couple of interesting tidbits. You know,
just a tease,
one of the original concept that Paul had, and it was Paul's, was that the Beatles, as this first album as a studio-only band, they would try and get rid of kind of the stigma, if you will, of being those lovable mop tops. And how best to do that? Well, let's pretend we're somebody else, and that frees us up from doing anything we want. And although the concept didn't really hold, it does feel like every song has its own character, as I was saying earlier. But Sergeant Pepper, the openings track with a little help from my friends, really sets the stage for this kind of mythical band. And, you know, opening up with the applause and then the brass band in there, which George Martin had scored, a wonderful vocal from Ringo, and with a little help from my friends, what a wonderful kind of sing-along type of song. It's a great way to just begin this album. And then you dive into the world of Lucy in the Sky and this you know, psychedelic trip that Lennon's taking us on, with lots of very interesting effects that I discuss in my lecture to make it seem like it's very otherworldly. And then as you progress, you get the music hall or the classical world of She's Leaving Home, a beautiful a piece written by John and Paul both. That is scored by a guy named not George Martin, another guy they brought in to score that. And then Being for the Benefit of Mr. Kite, the Beatles go to the circus and they do a lot of fun things in the studio to conjure up the sounds of the circus and the calliope and so forth. And then you flip the album over and you get India, and one of the first times you have an Indian Eastern ensemble combined with Western string instruments. And although George Harrison gets a tremendous amount of credit for writing a song like this, George Martin's contribution by having the Western string players imitate the sounds of the Eastern strings really, I don't think, gets enough credit. I think that really makes that interesting. And then the music hall, you're back in the 20s now for When I'm 64 and so forth, and ending, of course, with this amazing A Day in the Life with the scary orchestral buildup. It's just this incredible ride. And getting back to your earlier point, I think that's what makes the album so enjoyable, is that you don't feel like the songs are repeating themselves. You feel every song has something to offer.
And somehow it hangs together as a complete album that you don't want to stop. You don't want to just jump in, I thought at the time anyway. I think I still feel that now. You don't want to just jump in with one song. You really kind of do want to sit and have the whole experience of the beginning to end, even though it's not a narrative per se, but it somehow is how, you know, so for my inexperienced ears, that just sort of happens. Can you deconstruct that for me and tell me what they did to tie them together so they made sense in that order?
So I think, you know, there was a lot of agonizing over the track order, and in fact, they just announced that Apple is going to be reissuing Sgt. Pepper with Strawberry Fields and Penny Lane, which were left off the album. Where they're going to fit that, I have no idea, because it does sort of flow. The tracks don't have a lot of space between them. You have the, you know, start with Sgt. Pepper and the reprise of Sgt. Pepper near the end, so it kind of bookends the album very nicely. And we've gone, you know, from in the 50s and early 60s, everything was about the single, the single song, and albums were largely filler. Pepper changes that, and now people are listening to albums. And that's an art that I think we've really lost in the age of Spotify and Pandora and so forth. You've got people who are playing, you know, one track from the Beatles and then one track from Beyonce and one track from Radiohead, and you don't have people as much sitting through a whole album. And there is a certain value in being able to listen to one artist from the journey that they take you on from top to bottom. And when you have someone like the Beatles and Pepper, where every song is different, it does become a very interesting journey. So I'm not sure that answers your question directly, but certainly these tracks, they flow into one another. You go from the opening, welcome with the applause and Sgt. Pepper, through the reprise, and then the final, you know, ending of the huge piano crashing chord. It feels like, you know, a song suite as opposed to a bunch of random songs.
Let's take if you're just joining us, my guest is Scott Fryman. He's joining us from New York. He's featured, how do I explain this? This is your film. It's called The Beatles, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts, Deconstructing the Beatles, Sgt. Yes. Pepper's Lonely Heart. And it's lecture with music and 90 minutes of just sort of digging into fully this tiny...
Multimedia lecture with lots of stories, lots of rare information, photos, and lots of music that people haven't heard before.
I love it.
I try and isolate parts of songs. I play early takes. I play alternate versions. I play songs that inspired the music that they wrote. And I've been doing these lectures on different albums for a number of years, and I was approached about turning them into films last year, and we started with the first four, so White Album and now Pepper playing in South Dakota. Revolver is right on its heels, and then Rubber Soul will be the fourth one. And then we'll be filming this summer an early Beatles film and a Magical Mystery Tour film, and hopefully ending the year with an Abbey Road and a Let It Be film. So they'll all be coming out eventually.
All right, so let's talk about a song like, I don't know, A Day in the Life. Let's pick that one. And lyrically, musically, what can you tell me about how, when I sit down to listen to that song, what should I be listening for?
So I think one of the things you should listen for, the song is written in it's as if John Lennon is having a dream. And the way the song shifts for the middle section, which is pause, woke up, got out of bed, the echo goes away, the song kind of bounces along a little quicker, and then you're suddenly launched back into this dream. The arc of the song is really interesting. The way that they inserted this orchestral buildup, they wanted this massive orchestral sound, and working with George Martin, they decided to write a score that would have the orchestral players play 24 bars from their low note to their high note without looking at the person sitting next to them, everybody doing it at their own pace. And really interesting how they did that, how they got this massive wall of sound that just builds and builds and builds, the first time letting you into Paul's section and the last time ending with the big crashing chord. And then I talk on my website, I have a video about Jimi Hendrix and his influence on the song, because Jimmy was really loved by the Beatles, and he had just come out with his first single at the time called Hey Joe, and there's a chord sequence that really hadn't been found in rock and roll before that Paul kind of nicked right from Hey Joe and put it in the section that links from his portion of the song back to John's. So This is really, it's a little bit of an erector set of different pieces coming together and different people contributing. Ringo's drumming is outstanding on the song. And the whole is so much greater than the sum of the parts. It's really, it's a masterwork.
Lyrically, from a songwriting standpoint, with just the words that they put in and the poetry that's in there and the stories that they're telling, how does Sgt. Pepper's compare to their other albums and to what else was being offered at that time in popular music?
Well, I think there's a lot of what we now call psychedelic music starting to come out around that time. The same time that the Beatles are working on Pepper, Pink Floyd's in the next room working on Piper at the Gates of Dawn, their first album. Pretty Things are working on SF Sorrow, what is largely thought of as the first concept album by a rock and roll artist. So there is this move towards using the studio as an instrument and also making lyrics that are slightly more inspired by hallucinogenic drugs than boy meets girl, girl meets boy, boy loses girl, etc. And I think the Beatles started that shift really on Rubber Soul, is really where you see a notable change in their lyric focus. The relationships that they talk about on Rubber Soul, the boy meets girl songs, have taken a darker tone in songs like I'm Looking Through You. And then that continues on Revolver, which really doesn't have a love song other than Here, There, and Everywhere. All the other songs are talking about death, like Eleanor Rigby, or expanding your mind like Tomorrow Never Knows. So they've now sort of put the boy meets girl aside. And if you look at Sgt. Pepper, again, you don't really have a love song on Sgt. Pepper. You have songs inspired by TV shows like Good Morning, Good Morning, a circus poster like Being for the Benefit of Mr. Kite, newspapers, which is A Day in the Life. They're getting their inspiration from other places, and they've sort of left your simple Boy Meets Girl songs aside. And nothing wrong with Boy Meets Girl songs, but I think they were moving into new territories lyrically.
You'll never get tired of digging into this music, will you? There's always going to be something new waiting for you. Does it surprise you sometimes?
It does. It's amazing. You know, I've given these lectures now, you know, hundreds of times in some cases, and sometimes I'll be standing there or I'll be watching the film and I'll hear something that I just didn't pick up on before. So, and that makes me very excited because it means that there's just an endless trove of information and endless things that we can learn from the music of the Beatles.
If you're just joining us, my guest has been composer, musician, scholar, Scott Fryman. Scott, what's your website so people can find more?
So you can go to deconstructingthebeatles, all one word, .com, and you'll find trailers, you'll find all of the film dates, and lots of short videos you can watch about A Day in the Life and some other interesting things as well. And have a mailing list you can sign up for to find out when the other films are coming to South Dakota.
Scott, thanks so much for being here today.
You are more than welcome. Thanks so much for having me.
Deconstructing the Beatles, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band is coming to the Icon Lounge in Sioux Falls on March 14th. The doors open at 6 p.m. with food and beverage. The film starts at 7. You can find your tickets at eventbrite.com for $12 or get them at the door for $15. Find Cinema Falls on Facebook or head over to cinemafalls.com.